There's a nice hidden lake a short walk away from my house in Parsonfield, Maine. I've been going fishing there for as long as I've lived here. It's hidden away from any roads or houses. It has perfect privacy, and I would always be the only one out on the lake fishing. In fact, I would leave my kayak in the same spot by the lake whenever I wasn't using it. It was easier than lugging the thing back and forth from my house to the lake anytime I wanted to use it. I would leave it leaning up against this huge tree every time. The kayak is heavy enough to not fall over from a windstorm or anything. I also leave it covered to prevent critters from taking refuge inside. It was a warm summer's evening. I was out on the lake already for about an hour, and I'd caught a few trout already, which I'd thrown into the cooler. It was dusk at this point. The little bit of light left in the sky was disappearing behind the trees. I was gonna bring it in soon, and just then, I heard sounds from the edge of the lake. I turned and saw someone standing at the edge of the water, tipping a barrel of some kind over, pouring its contents into the lake. It looked to me like they were polluting the lake with something. I took it upon myself to yell out, "Excuse me, what are you doing?" The person looked up at me, and he then ran into the woods, with the contents of the barrel still pouring into the water. I looked more closely at the liquid being poured out into the lake, and it looked like a dark red liquid. Though it was dark out, so I can't say with 100% certainty if it was red, but it was very dark. I felt a sense of unease creep up throughout my body. I decided I wanted to leave. I'm a big nature guy though, and seeing people littering or polluting the environment makes me sick. I genuinely couldn't resist shouting something out to that person, but I didn't feel comfortable here any longer. I planned on reporting this to the Department of Environmental Protection. I paddled the kayak back to my usual spot. I took all of my gear off the kayak before pulling it out of the water. As I was putting the cover over the kayak, I heard one single snap of something not far away, like the crunch of something under a person's shoe. I turned and was about to say who's there, but I decided against it. I finished covering the kayak quicker than I ever had before. I didn't even bother standing it up to lean on the tree this time. I left it on the ground. I picked up my gear and cooler and started quickly walking out of the woods and onto the road, which led to my house. It was only a couple minutes of a walk and I was back home. I kept looking over my shoulder the entire time though, thinking someone was behind me. I put my gear in the shed real quick, then went inside. I never locked the door so quickly. I was genuinely spooked. I rinsed off the trout and put them in the fridge, planning on cooking them tomorrow. Tonight, I just heated up some leftovers. As the food was in the microwave, there was a knock at my front door. The fear and dread that I was feeling the entire walk back to the house returned in an instant, and my suspicion that I was being followed home was basically confirmed. I mean, who else would be knocking on my door this late? My lights were on, my car was in the driveway, whoever it was knew I was in here. I had all the shades closed though, so nobody could look inside. They knocked on the door again. The microwave beeped as the timer hit zero. I'm sure whoever was outside heard it. All the windows were cracked open, and a moment later, there was a knock now on the window, and a man's voice said through the window, "Excuse me, I think you saw me at the lake earlier. I'd just like to explain myself." There was absolutely no chance I was opening the door to this person. For them to stalk me to my house told me this was a dangerous person. They repeatedly knocked on the window and kept yelling hello through it. I decided to acknowledge him now that he was getting more aggressive. I yelled, "Yo, leave or I'll call the police." I intended to either way, but it was still a threat to get him to leave. The man responded calmly now, saying, "Sir, if you could just open the front door, I'll explain everything to you." I repeated my threat, and I didn't hear his voice again. At this point, I shut and locked every window in the house and turned on the AC. I also made a report to the non-emergency police number, detailing both the barrel being dumped into the lake and the man coming to my house. I also made an online report with the Department of Environmental Protection. Making these two reports honestly made me feel a little better about going to sleep that night. But thank God I'm a light sleeper. In the middle of the night, like 2 a.m., I heard a crash from downstairs. I immediately sprang out of my bed and grabbed my Glock from the closet. I heard someone's attempt at quiet footsteps coming up the creaky wooden steps. I had my Glock loaded in hand as I stood behind my dresser right by my closet, aiming at the door. I heard very slow creeping towards my door. My bedroom door is closest to the stairs, so it was naturally the first door that they would approach. And sure enough, I heard the doorknob slowly press down, and then the door pushed open. I saw nothing but the man's silhouette enter the room. I flicked on the lamp next to me so he could see my gun, and I screamed, "Get on the ground now." He raised his hands in the air and seemed for a second to be motioning for me to calm down. He had a small blade in his hand. I told him to drop it, but then he said calmly, "I'm leaving," and he turned and ran for downstairs. I yelled at him to stop, but he clearly took the chance on me being too afraid to pull the trigger. I heard him leave through the front door. I ran downstairs to lock the front door right away and then call 911. My living room window was shattered. Glass was all over the floor. I kept my sight on that broken window until the police officers showed up. I had to explain that I already made a non-emergency report of what happened earlier. In fear of waiting too long by morning for the barrel to be gone, in the darkness, I went with two of the officers who showed up to my house to where I saw that man dumping the barrel into the lake. But after 20 minutes of walking around looking for it, it was gone. The man must have made sure not to leave it behind. I gave my best description of the man to the police for their report. The man was a short, bearded white man with a receding hairline and glasses, wearing a black flannel shirt and black pants. After the police left, I stayed in the living room all night with my gun next to me, watching TV. No way in hell was I going to sleep with a broken window and some nut job out there. At dawn, my brothers came over to help me fix the window. My brother Dale stayed at the house while my other brother and I went to Home Depot to get the window and parts. Dale stayed at the house with me for a few nights till things cooled down. My not-so-wild theory is that the barrel contained human remains, possibly dissolved in some kind of acid. Why else would that man follow me home and then break into my house to potentially murder me? Trust your gut if something feels wrong. I knew if I opened my door to that man, something terrible might have happened to me. Ever since I was a little kid, all the older men in my family would take me fishing every opportunity they got. It was like some family ritual. I, being the youngest, meant that I was next in line to become an expert, like all of them claimed to be. The ones who took it the most seriously were my dad and his brother Matthew. Our houses were decked out like the ones you've probably seen on fishing shows. I won't go into detail, but if you took a step into my house, you'd instantly be able to tell my parents spend more time on the water than on the land. This is actually his story, not mine. My dad's a pretty hard guy to scare, but let me tell you, whenever he tells this story, it's like he's a different person. He doesn't like talking about it, but every so often, at a family gathering or a special occasion, one of my relatives will ask him to tell it, and he will. My dad's name is John. He was fishing with my uncle Matthew and their close friends Rich, Jeff, and Monty. They had set out early, before the sun had even broken the horizon, heading to a remote spot they had all agreed was prime fishing territory. This place was a couple of hours boat ride from the nearest marina, tucked away in a secluded cove-type area that few bothered to explore. It was known among them for its abundant bass and the occasional pike. The day started like any other fishing trip, with the boat cutting smoothly through the mist rising off the water, everyone sharing stories and jokes over the hum of the engine. They anchored the boat in a familiar cove, surrounded by dense forest. Monty was the first to crack open a beer, even though it was so early in the morning. My dad tells me all the time that Monty is his wild friend, the one who tends to drink a little more than he should. They fished for hours, the only sounds being the occasional splash of a lure hitting the water, and their own laughter. Oh, and the occasional crunch of empty beer cans that they were drinking like water. As the day wore on, they had their fair share of catches, each one sparking a small celebration. As dusk approached, the light began to wane. A dense fog rolled in from the water. My dad describes it as the boat literally being swallowed by fog. Rich, who was the most experienced fisherman of the group, kept saying that he had never seen fog so thick. That's how unnatural it was. Jeff, the jester of the group, was almost as drunk as Monty, both of whom were seemingly unfazed by the fog that had ensnared them. It was starting to get dark. They had originally thought that they could just wait out the fog, but it didn't seem to be going anywhere. My dad and Rich agreed that Matthew should just try to drive the boat out of the cove and into the open ocean, where the fog probably wouldn't be as dense. Matthew agreed, but even though he was typically the most cautious, he only narrowly avoided colliding with the shore. He refused to risk further damage to his prized boat. They reluctantly came to terms with the fact that they'd probably have to spend the night on the boat. My dad made the point that they'd need to tell their families about the situation, and of course, they had drifted into an area of the cove that had no signal. My dad needed to handle some business at work, so neglecting the problem was not an option. He offered to go ashore in search of a signal, and Rich and Jeff said they'd join him. Matthew would stay back to guard the boat and an increasingly inebriated Monty. My dad, Jeff, and Rich made their way over to the shore and jumped out of the boat, only getting slightly wet. My dad made a point of snagging the emergency flares in the boat, just in case they got lost and needed to signal Matthew to come find them. The three of them made their way into the pitch-black woods, lit only by the shine of their phone flashlights. My dad and his friends have all done their fair share of camping, so it wasn't like a forest scared them too much. They began trekking uphill, hoping that higher ground would give them a better chance of finding a signal. My dad always made a point of emphasizing how dark, yet eerily foggy the forest was. You could practically feel yourself slicing through the fog. Just as they were adjusting to the dense atmosphere, a series of strange clicking noises began to permeate the silence, first emerging from directly in front of them before encircling them completely. These sounds were unlike any forest sounds they were familiar with. It was rhythmic yet erratic, as if someone was tapping out a code meant only for the woods themselves. The distinctiveness of the noise made one thing clear: it was human-made. The realization that they weren't alone hit them like a freight train. Rich, the most seasoned of the trio when it came to outdoor survival, whispered urgently for them to turn off their flashlights. "Don't give away our position," he hissed, with a note of genuine concern in his voice. As the lights switched off, the darkness became thicker than the fog. The clicking noises stopped abruptly, replaced by a silence that seemed to weigh on their chests. Time lost meaning as they stood there, frozen, unsure of their next move. I'm sure they were all thinking the same thing. The idea that they might have stumbled upon some kind of clandestine gathering or a woods cult was terrifying. Then, as suddenly as it had stopped, the silence was broken by rustling noises, this time much closer. Then silence again, and then a guttural scream echoed through the trees. A sound so primal and full of anguish that it rooted them to the spot. Before they could process what was happening, rapid stomping noises thundered through the woods towards them. The three men took off, back the way they had came. Acting on fear and pure instinct, my dad fired the flare gun behind them. The flare cut through the fog, lighting the woods up. For a moment, the woods were as clear as day, and the sight that met their eyes was nothing short of horrifying. Illuminated by the flare's red glow was a pack of more than 10 individuals dressed in what could only be described as tribal attire. Some of them brandished wooden spears, but the light from the flare only lasted a split second. Jeff screamed and almost stumbled, but Rich quickly grabbed his arm to keep him upright. My dad describes this part as the most overwhelming feeling of pure terror he has ever experienced. The forest seemed to fight against them as they fled, ducking under branches and jumping over roots. By some miracle, they emerged from the tree line, panting and disoriented but alive. They screamed at Matthew to start the engine, the urgency in their voices leaving no room for question. Matthew complied immediately, and the boat lurched forward just as their pursuers reached the shoreline. In the chaos, my dad fired the last flare into the air, back towards the shore. For a split second, as the flare's light pierced the fog, they saw their pursuers at the water's edge. It was freakish. There must have been at least 15 of them just standing motionless at the water's edge. The flare's light faded and it was dark again. Matthew managed to get a safe distance away and stopped the boat again. After the engine was off, the only sounds were Jeff, my dad, and Rich's breathing. My dad says he wasn't able to process what had happened for nearly an hour. He was functioning off pure adrenaline and survival instincts. They ended up taking turns keeping watch while the others slept, and left first thing in the morning as soon as the fog dissipated. Funnily enough, Monty had passed out before everything went down and doesn't remember any of the details of that night. I still get shivers down my spine when I tell this story. I can only imagine what my dad must feel when he thinks back to it. I've been fishing for as long as I can remember. I'm almost 60 years old now, and even though I've been fishing thousands of times, I can't think of any other way I'd rather spend the rest of my life. My kids are all off living their own lives, and things around the house are quiet now. You could hear a pin drop most of the time. Sometimes I miss the old days, being able to throw the pigskin around with my boys in the backyard, but some things just aren't in the game plan anymore. I usually fish with my pals from college, but more often than not, I found myself going at it alone, like a lone wolf. This was one of those times. I haven't stepped foot outside upstate New York in over 15 years. I don't see a reason to. We've got some of the best fishing lakes in the country, and I plan on making full use of them. It was mid-April in the early season, just after the ice out and before May hit. For whatever reason, I decided I wanted a more secluded spot this time around, so I chose a nondescript lake in the middle of nowhere that was pretty small. I drove up an hour before sunrise so that I could be out on the water when the sun poked through. I unstrapped my kayak from the roof of the car and made my way over to the lake. I rowed out to the middle of the lake and admired the beautiful early colors starting to paint the sky. It felt like home. You can bet your bottom dollar I'd never trade a day like this for anything. It was a little chilly, but I've got skin like steel. I could tell the sun was just about to appear in the sky, so I started gearing up. I was shooting for largemouth bass, so I made my way back to the outside edge of the weed beds, planning to move back toward the middle of the lake if I got skunked. I went for a 6.5-foot medium-action spinning rod with 9-pound monofilament line. I was using a wacky rig, which is a 4-inch rubber stick worm, my go-to for catching largemouth. Just before I was about to start what would hopefully be a swell day on the water, I noticed something strange across the lake. I couldn't quite see what was going on, but I could tell that there was movement. At first, I thought it was a fellow fisherman, but curiosity got the better of me. I reached into my knapsack and pulled out my pair of binoculars I used for bird watching. I looked across the lake, and there were three figures wearing dark colors and hoods covering their faces. They looked like they were digging a hole or something on the edge of the lake. I kept watching. They finished their hole, and while I was expecting them to put something inside it, they actually did the opposite. One of them pulled something out of the hole, which I couldn't make out even with my binoculars. Then the other two did the same, pulling out a few more things that I couldn't quite see. I was beyond confused. Then I watched as they started tossing the items into the lake, each one making a distinct splash as it smacked the water. Something was wrong. Out of nowhere, a wave of fear washed over me. I didn't know who these people were, but I started thinking they might be dangerous. I didn't know what to do. Thankfully, they started to leave without noticing me. I thought about turning a blind eye, but couldn't bring myself to do it. I waited until they disappeared into the woods, and slowly rowed my way over. I was shaking at this point. I got to the spot where I was pretty sure they had tossed everything. I started fishing, only this time I wasn't fishing for fish. I was going for something else entirely. I fished around for about an hour with no luck. I had to try something different. I racked my brain, trying to figure out what I could do. And just then, I remembered my depth checker. I had it tucked away in my Volvo. I was determined at this point. I rowed back to shore, returned to my car, retrieved the depth checker, and rowed back to the spot. I was sweating heavily at this point. I poked around for a bit, feeling nothing but squishy lake bottom. And then, I felt something hard, something metal. I made a mental note of the spot and grabbed my rod. I took the rig off and replaced it with the largest hook I had. I let the spool out slowly, my pointer finger feeling the gentle movement of the line. 50 years of fishing experience was going into this one catch. I felt the slight resistance in the line. It had hit something. I moved the line around slowly, hoping I'd be able to snag it on whatever was down there. After about a minute, the line tugged a little harder than was normal. I was snagged. I reeled in slowly, careful not to drop my catch. What I pulled out of the water had me shivering in my boots. I stared at the black 9mm on the end of my line. Those thugs had thrown a gun into the lake. I didn't feel safe anymore. I didn't even bother looking around for the other items. I reeled the gun into my kayak, careful not to touch it, and hightailed it out of there. As soon as I got to dry land, I called the police. They launched a full investigation and recovered several more unsettling things from the lake. I insisted on watching them conduct their search because I needed to know what was at the bottom of that lake. They found a keychain with like 7 keys on it and a bunch of old, foreign coins from different countries wrapped in a cloth. The most eerie thing they found, though, was a locket. It was waterlogged, so the pictures inside were faded and unintelligible. The police told me they'd contact me if they ever connected these dots to some kind of crime. They never called me, though. But the story didn't end there. One night, I don't remember how many days after this incident, I heard someone in my front yard say, "That was the car, I know it," and then people snooping around my yard. They never rang the bell or knocked on the door, but I heard multiple people circling my house, and then they just left. I have no idea if it were the same people, and if they were, I have no idea if I'm being watched anytime I leave my house. I alerted the police once more, hoping this would reopen this investigation, but nothing became of it once again. I still have so many questions. Why would those items be buried in the first place? And why would those people go back just to dig them up and hide them again? Maybe they realized that there was a greater chance they'd be found in the ground, so they went back and threw them in the lake. Or maybe those items had been in that hole for years, and they decided to dig them up for some reason. All in all, this was the strangest thing that has ever happened to me while fishing. Throughout my life, I would go through phases of different hobbies. I'd pick something that interests me, obsess over it for a year or so, and then find something new to keep myself entertained. During the summer of 2022, I was big into fishing. About an hour's drive away is a shore house my family has owned for decades that's on the water with a lagoon and small Boston whaler. My friends and I would take frequent trips there to fish and just chill. It was the following October after summer when my two friends Kevin and Arian decided to hit the shore house for a weekend to try to catch some striper, as they're abundant during the fall months. Kevin was an avid fisherman, which was a big reason why I got into the whole fishing craze in the first place. Unfortunately, during this time, our boat was out of the water due to maintenance, so we'd have to fish off the beach and piers. This was no problem though, as Kevin had all the necessary rods and gear to do so. We got together on a Friday afternoon, and I drove us all down. When we got there, we fished during the day off of different piers along the inlet. Night rolled by, and only one of us had caught fish, which was Kevin, of course. It was just a small bass though, nothing too exciting. Bummed about our luck, we decided to stay up late to fish off the beach during the night. Kevin said he knew a good beach spot about 15 minutes away, which took us down a desolate road with woods on both sides. It opened up into a small gravel parking area, or at least what seemed like one. Kevin said since we'd have to walk a little ways to the spot, we should take everything we need now so we won't have to go back to the car to get anything. We planned on staying up to catch the sunrise, so we packed accordingly. We walked about 5 minutes down this path, which opened up into a massive beach. We set up camp, which consisted of beach chairs, a speaker, and two coolers, one filled with ice for fish and one filled with snacks, water, and beers. Kevin brought these massive fishing rods that were ideal for beach fishing, and also rod holders that you would hammer into the sand. He also had these little bells that connect to the tip of the rod to notify you of any movement. We all casted our rods, cracked a couple beers, and played the waiting game. Within 2 hours, each of us had caught decent-sized fish, which definitely lightened our spirits. We were having a great time, music blasting, knowing that no one was around on this deserted beach. Mid-conversation, Arian stopped talking, lowered the music, and jolted his head to the left. He asked if we heard that, to which we replied, "Heard what?" It looked like he was concentrating on something for a second and then said, "I heard someone yell something." We obviously thought he was hearing things or just joking with us, but he insisted he heard someone yell out something that sounded like a yo or a hey. Either way, it seemed unlikely given that we were on some hidden beach at like 1 a.m., so he quickly forgot about it and our conversation resumed. It definitely made us more aware though. A couple minutes later, right after I cast in a fresh hook, I noticed something out of the corner of my eye. There was something on the beach in the distance, but I couldn't see what exactly. The others noticed it too. As it got closer, we realized what it was. A person walking towards us. We grew silent and turned off the music. He came up to us. It was a middle-aged white man, maybe 40 or 50. He was wearing a dark blue jacket with a hat and hood up. The way he walked up to us was really sketchy, and he had this intimidating look on his face. We said, "What's up?" kind of awkwardly. He just eyed us down for like 10 seconds and then said in a low voice, "What are you boys up to?" It was pretty apparent what we were up to. Kevin said, "We're fishing," and he let out some grunt of acknowledgement and nodded his head. He didn't say a word after that and just stood there, looking at us, and then the rods, and then the water. We shot each other looks, thinking he was going to try and rob us. There's no way he could have taken on the three of us, though. The bell on one of our rods broke the silence, notifying us that we had potentially hooked a fish. I said we got one, kind of directed at everyone, but mostly that weird guy, in hopes that I would get some response out of him like a normal person. I walked over to the rods and reeled in a small striper. When I went back to unhook the fish, that man had turned around and left. We watched as his dark silhouette faded away into the night. We made sure that we had all of our belongings, then sat and just talked about how odd that encounter was. He left without harming us, though, so we concluded that he was just some weird man who is now thankfully out of our business. We kept the music off just to be cautious and cracked a few more beers as our conversation transitioned to different topics. At one point, while staring into the horizon, I thought I heard something in the distance. It took me a second to realize what it was, but when I did, my heart dropped. It was a car alarm. I knew it was mine. It was the only car in that lot, and no houses were out there for probably miles. We started panicking and decided to run back to the car, leaving all of our stuff behind. It took us a couple minutes to get there, and when we did, I was completely distraught. My tires had been slashed, and my driver's side window had been shattered. I got on my phone with the police immediately and told them my location and situation. The operator asked if I knew who may have done it, and we said some sketchy guy came up to us as we were fishing. She asked if I knew where he went, and I said no. Just as I said this, we heard rustling in the woods around us. My heart rose into my throat. I felt trapped. We frantically ran like 200 yards down the road and hid in the trees. I told the operator this, and she said to stay hidden and keep quiet. Within 10 minutes, we saw two cop cars speed past with their lights on. We ran back to the car and saw three officers searching the area. Multiple things had been stolen, including my wallet, some cash that was in the glove box, and the remainder of Kevin's fishing gear. They found a large knife lying on the ground nearby, which they took for fingerprints and evidence. I told them the whole story with my adrenaline still pumping. They said we were smart to run away and hide, as it's very likely this man meant us harm. Those words made me appreciate my life so much more. The officers made us feel safe, and were nice enough to help us pack up the equipment and carry it back. They took down our information and gave us a ride back to the house. We stayed up all night reflecting on what had just happened. That morning, Arian got us a ride up north, and I picked up my car from the shop a few days later. To this day, this is by far the most frightening experience I've ever had. What was supposed to be a normal fishing trip became a terrifying ordeal that cost me hundreds of dollars worth of damages. I never got a call back from the police, meaning that guy is probably still out there. Needless to say, I gave up fishing as a hobby and haven't touched it since.